You're listening to Invisible by Design. It's a community conversation about domestic violence on Northern Community Radio. I'm Heidi Holton with John Bauer. We're bringing you real conversations from people in our community living in crisis. These conversations aren't easy, but we think that we as a community need to hear what has been made invisible by design. Thanks for listening.
Was your husband abusive to you?
For 10 years. It was just little things at first when we were dating. I was 16. He was fine. He was 21. You know, we liked to go out and, you know, and if my daughters heard that, I mean, he could buy alcohol and he could, you know, do all the things that you weren't supposed to do. And so I kind of got hooked in right with that. And then he didn't hit me for the first time until about a year into being together. And the first time it was just a slap across the face. And a lot of times he was really good about grabbing me and leaving bruises on my arms because you couldn't see them. And he would squeeze until I would just stop. And I didn't even notice that it was happening as much. And then when I moved to St. Cloud and then we moved to Cold Spring, he didn't like my friends, so I didn't talk to my friends anymore. And then he didn't think that my family needed to be around as much as they were. And so then it got to the point that they came down for Thanksgiving and Christmas Eve. And I would come up here to see them, and he would stay home. And it happened so gradually, I didn't even see that it was happening. And then I stayed home with the boys. And then I ended up getting a bartending job. And, well, I started out at a liquor store, and then they offered me a bartending job. And then all of a sudden, now I'm 21, and I'm seeing that there's other people out there, and you know, I got to know more people in the town, and so it took me a few years, but eventually I started talking to some of my friends before that he didn't like, and then she started coming down and hanging out with me, and I knew I was thinking about leaving, but I didn't know how. I didn't know what to do, and because he always told me that I could never do it on my own. I could never take care of the boys on my own, and I needed him, and if I thought I was leaving, I wasn't taking the kids with me. And so, I mean, I really had no self-worth at that point. I just, you know, he said, you know, you're just a bartender. That isn't going to support you. And,
you know, and one of the things we've been fighting with, the verbal abuse and the psychological abuse is worse than the physical abuse. What do you have to say to that?
Oh, absolutely. Just because words bite. When you keep getting knocked down, you know, like I said, I didn't think I could do anything. I graduated from high school and I didn't go on to school. I didn't have a degree. And so I didn't know that I could do anything else. And I didn't think about, you know, I could go back to college even though I was a mom. Didn't even dawn on me that I could get a degree because I didn't think I could. I didn't think that I was capable of doing anything other than taking care of kids and scrubbing floors and pouring drinks. And so I think that was the worst part, you know, because when he would slap me or he'd grab my arm, those bruises would go away. But, you know, when he'd say hurtful things, you always think that, and you just think that you're not worth anything. And he used to tell me that I was lucky that he was there. You get to depend on them so much that you think you need them. I think psychological is so much harder because you have to get over that and try to overcome that. When I did move up here with my friend, she said, well, we'll split the rent. You know, she said, it's $500. She said, you only have to come up with $250. And she said, we don't get cable, so we don't have phones. You know, not a big deal. I guess I hadn't even thought about that I was going to get child support. It didn't even dawn on me that he would have to help me. And so when I did move out and I was awarded child support, the child support was enough to pay the rent. And so I'd seen that I could do it. So I think that's kind of what tipped him over the edge is once I got up here, I could do it. And I think that was really hard for him, you know, because I left March 23rd and then he murdered the boys on July 3rd. So I think he just kept thinking he'd call me and say, you know, if you just come home, I'll just forgive you. Or if you just come home, you know, we can pretend like this never happened. And he would tell the boys, you know, if your mom would just love me again, we could be a family. So then I'd get it from the boys and on how I'm ruining the family. And so he played the boys quite a bit.
Was he ever violent to the boys? Or
he was hard on the boys. He'd spank them. The day that I was leaving, he backhanded Brandon in the mouth because Brandon bit him when he was attacking me. But that was the only time that he had ever, I mean, he spanked him, but when he hit Brandon in the mouth, that was the only time he had physically, like, assaulted the boys that I was scared. And they've asked me that over and over. Did I ever think that he would do that? No. If you would have asked me, do you think he'd kill you? Yep. That wouldn't have surprised, I don't think, anybody. Because he would follow me if I would go do something with my friends. He'd follow me outside of their houses just to see if I was really there. For him to murder me, that wouldn't have been as surprising. But that he actually took the boys, that I didn't see coming. I mean, that kind of blindsided everybody. I mean, I didn't, even thinking back now, I just didn't think that he would ever touch those boys. So.
It's Invisible by Design on Northern Community Radio, our community conversation about domestic violence. Our survivor tells us more about what it was like after she left her abusive husband, and he was allowed unsupervised visits.
And so he had taken the boys on the one weekend, and it was fine. And then he came up to watch the boys at Taekwondo on the 3rd of July, and they didn't have Taekwondo, and I didn't realize. So we got there, and it was canceled for the night. So I went to my mom's house, and he came over there, and I said, you can go ahead and take him swimming or to McDonald's and just have him back by 8 o'clock because we had plans for the 4th. And then I went over to a friend's. I was just going to hang out there for a couple hours and wait, and then at 8 o'clock I called my mom to see if the boys were back, and she said that he still wasn't back. And so at 8:30 I called the women's shelter to ask what I should do because he wasn't back, and they said, well, call the police. And so I called the police. And the chief of police in town said that, you know, he's probably just a dad that wants his kids for the holiday, so don't worry about it. He'll be back. I mean, there was no concern, you know, because it was their dad. And then I called my attorney and said, you know, he's got the boys and he's not bringing them back. What should I do? And he said that, you know, there really wasn't anything we could do because by now it was 9 o'clock on the 3rd of July. So that he said, we're going to have to wait until the 5th, which would have been a Friday. And we'd go in and get an emergency ex parte order and get him on kidnapping for taking the boys without permission. And I said, okay. And so I went to work that night. And in the meantime, I had kept calling his house in Cold Spring thinking, you know, that's where he was. And, you know, and I told him, I want my boys back. You need to bring back. It's not your time. And I said, if you don't bring the kids back, I am going to go back into court. And I had called the Stearns County Police and asked if they would go do a welfare check on the boys just to make sure that they were okay, because I had heard from somebody in Cold Spring that his van was at the house, just so that I knew that they were really there. And then the Cold Spring Police had called the Brainerd Police, and I got a phone call from the Brainerd Police Department, and the Brainerd Police told me that I needed to come to the station. And I said, no, I'm going to go down to Cold Spring and get my boys because I know that's where they are. And they said, no, you need to come. Don't leave Crow Wing County. And then I was kind of worried that at that point I had thought that he committed suicide in front of the boys, because that was always his threat, is that he was going to commit suicide if me and the boys ever left. And so I called the Cold Spring Police and said that I was on my way and not to take my boys anywhere, because I was worried that they'd, you know, put him on a 72-hour hold and, you know, and then wait until after the holidays and the weekend. And so I wanted him to keep the boys there. And then I called my mom and dad and told them that I was supposed to go to the Brainerd Police Department. And so my mom and dad and my relief showed up at work so I could leave. And then when we got to the Brainerd Police Department, I just remembered they were all sitting there, and they met us at the door. And they walked us back to a conference room, and their chief of police was there, and there were four officers there. He asked me to sit down, and I asked what was going on, and he had asked if I knew that the boys were in Cold Spring, you know, that he had taken the boys to Cold Spring. He was just kind of making chit-chat, just talking, and I said, no, I just want to know what the hell's going on with my kids. And he just said, Angie, they're gone. And I didn't know what gone meant. I mean, at that point, I was still thinking that he took the boys and just left with them and ran. My mom stepped up and said, do you mean that they're dead? And he said, yeah, I'm sorry. And I don't remember what happened after. I mean, it was pretty, things got really crazy. And I was just in shock. I didn't really know what was going on. And she remember leaving and going outside. And my dad came out there with me, and we just sat on the curb for quite a while. Then we went back inside, and my mom asked if Kurt was dead too. And they said no, he was in surgery because he had tried to commit suicide, but he didn't succeed.
It's Northern Community Radio. This conversation took place in Brainerd at a center named for our survivors' kids. Not only did she work to get this built, but she worked with state leaders in Sheila and Paul Wellstone to change laws. She tells us more about the legacy of her children.
This room is the intake room at the Alex and Brandon Safety Center. It's secured. There's cameras everywhere so that if people need to have supervised visits, the custodial parents will come in one door and the non-custodial parents will come in the other door so that they never have to see. They're on opposite sides of the building. And there's different rooms. There's a toy room, a kitchen area if they want to have their visit over a meal. They can bring food in and cook it here. There's another room with a TV and a Wii and board games. There's always security, staff to do the supervised visits or the supervised exchange. It's great. I mean, their pictures are everywhere. It's nice to have something that's solid, that's named after them.
Does it bring you a sense of, I don't know, pride or solace to know that something good happened out of something so terrible?
Well, and they're not forgotten. I think that's my thing is, my boys will always be in everybody's thoughts as to what can happen. And so many people, you know, if you say a child's name that had been murdered, nobody knows who that is. You know, we have this. And so it's like they will continue on. So, and I am very proud.